May the words that I speak be ever pleasing in your sight. Amen. Please be seated. Now, I don't know about you, but when I was preparing for today and going through the readings, I thought perhaps a few light reflections would be necessary. I have always thought that God had a sense of humour, and examples of which and of whom can be seen every day in church and around us. From today's reading in Malachi 4, I was given a bit of judgment and covenant renewal when God says, "Surely the day is coming and it will burn like a furnace. But for you who revere my name, the Sun of Righteousness will rise with healing in its rays. And you will go out and frolic like well-fed calves." The healing rays sound wonderful, but frothing like a well-fed calf, I think, is positively now beyond me. And then in 2 Thessalonians, God warns me against idleness. He has heard that some among us are idle and disruptive, and they are not busy, but they are busybodies. Oh dear, I thought. But I'd only had 2 weeks holiday this year, Lord. So finally in Luke 23, the destruction of the temple and the sign of the end of time, which is the title of my sermon this morning. God said, "Nation will rise against nation and kingdom against kingdom. There will be great earthquakes, famines and pestilence in various places, and fearful events and great signs from heaven. And we will be betrayed by parents, by brothers and sisters and relatives and friends. And they will put some of us to death. Everyone will hate you because of me. But not a hair on your head will perish. Stand firm, and you will win life." I think if we look back over the last month or so, or 3.5 years in fact, we can reflect on recent Brexit events to start with. Or perhaps almost every family we know. And although I trust none of us ever comes across being put to death by them, that would be some saying. But enough. Let us look at today's sermon. No reading of Luke is complete without us coming to realize that Luke is concerned that the world understands that Jesus is the hope of the world, and that any teaching that leads away from this makes it a false teaching. No matter what, no matter when, Jesus will be there to give us life. In our own time, there have been those who have predicted the end was near because of some tragedy that has shaken our world. Every time some doomsday person took from an awful event that God was getting ready to shut the earth down. There is nothing new in people claiming such knowledge. It happened in the times of Jesus, and it will happen again in our time as well. In the world in which Jesus lived, there were certain events that seemed to foretell the end of the world. Just such an event signaled the time when Jesus would come again and the end would be near. Luke is careful to teach that the end of the world is not going to be connected with any event we, as humans, can orchestrate. Jesus uses the story of the temple being destroyed to make an important point. History tells us that on a clear day, the temple in Jerusalem was visible for miles around. The reason it was so, and you could easily see it, and that because it was constructed of huge pieces of white marble. And when the sun struck it just right, it almost looked like a snow-covered mountain. And the temple was a visible reminder of stability and strength. Anyone who has ever seen it knew that it was going to be standing as a witness to the greatness of God. The huge marble pieces would stand the test of time and would always remind the Jewish people of the permanence of their place in the promised land. Our gospel tells us that the disciples asked Jesus a very human question. If what Jesus has taught them is true, namely that the temple itself will fall, when will this catastrophic event take place? Well, I think we'd all like to know that, because we also would be afraid. We would not be ready, and we might die. We, like the disciples, would have been scared to death. But remember that the temple meant as much to the disciples as it did to anyone else. Ask anyone who you haven't seen in church for a long time why they don't come anymore. And a common response is, we came to church when our children were involved, but they outgrew Sunday school and we stopped coming. Or, I enjoy going to church on the really big days, like Christmas and Easter. Compared with those days, other services are a little bit dull. But likely the most difficult thing to be told is that the church is no longer relevant to that person's life. And that means that we as a church have failed this person in some way. Worse yet, it means that the church didn't even recognize the problem before the missing person stopped attending. One of my favourite films, and some of us that are perhaps a little bit older will remember this, is The Poseidon Adventure from 1972. You might remember that it was a cruise ship. The cruise ship was turned upside down by an enormous wave. Reality was turned upside down. The way out was up to the bottom and back to the front. The survivors had to go to the bottom of the boat, which was now the top, to get out, if you follow my track. The whole group of people who were not willing to follow the lead of the minister to crawl up a Christmas tree to get out of the ballroom to safety. And he said, everyone is dead who was above us when the ship turned over. Now they are underneath us. It's up to us to get out of here. Sadly, the people who waited for help drowned. But those who were willing to have faith eventually were saved. Not all, but most. The minister was indeed the Christ figure for those people. They eventually trusted him and they were saved. Now we live in a very confusing and it seems at times a very broken world. We live in a world where there is suffering, pain and sorrow. We live in a world where competing religions threaten to undo our ability to live together in peace. Our young people today know only a world where terrorism and indifference prevail. They have every right to question where history is going, but if you live life not worried about the end of the world, you will live life to the fullest now, and that will help everyone. We sometimes have avoided talk of the second coming. However, today we are faced with a new kind of indifference. It is a feeling of hopelessness that threatens the very foundation of our world. Now, as it is over 2,000 years ago, the ultimate answer is to be found in Jesus Christ. There is no need for us to be afraid. Christians have nothing to fear at the end of time. Christian people have nothing to fear about death and the end of the world. We will not, however, be immune to the pain of this world. Christians are not set apart from the world, but experience all the harsh realities of this world. Whatever the future may hold, God can be trusted to see you through. And in the meantime, your faith and faithfulness must be demonstrated by doing whatever it is God is calling you to do. People who persecuted the disciples and other Christians in the early years of the church failed to understand that in the end, God will fashion eternity for us. That is why we can take great comfort in Jesus' words. By your endurance, you will gain your souls. Hope for the future, hope for today, is worth living for. Making each day count, even if it is just taking a walk. We cannot fear the future, because that is in God's hands. We cannot fear today, because that is in God's hands too. So live for the moment and wait. And we all have to wait. Wait for the coming, not with fear, but with hope. We wait, planning our lives, living our lives, hoping our lives will mean something to God and those around us. Now there's a few people here today who you may recognize. Helen Giles, Nee Turner, Rachel Moat, with whom I did my training all those years ago, and they very kindly came to assist me today. And then, down this side, we have Elliot Hathaway, who many of you may remember was a server here at St. Michael's for quite a number of years before he went to university, and Dan Stanley, Catherine's eldest, who was service here also prior to go to university. Now all these four people were part and parcel of my journey, and it gives me great pleasure to have them here today. Then there is you, my own church family, who have supported me all over these years. I remember with trepidation the first time I stood here in front of you and pledged that I would serve you as a reader here. I thought until today, but that's somehow changed now. I seem to be going on a bit more. So my time as a licensed reader lay minister has ended today, and I become a reader lay minister with permission to officiate and at the vicar's invitation. But what's different? Well, not a lot really, but my grateful thanks have to go to Derwin, Derek and June for all their love, help and support. It's not been easy at times, but we got there, and we got there in the end, I hope. And the last big thing is to thank my family, and Jenny, of course, without whom none of this would have been possible. I couldn't have done it without you all. But I'm so looking forward to seeing what God has in store for me in the coming years. But I suppose I'll just have to wait and see. Amen.